On Tech News Today, Apple and Google go to extremes to attract game developers. A major Japanese company rolls out a WebRTC client. Facebook plans to announce a mobile ad network. Square is burning through cash and needs to be acquired fast. And Microsoft finalizes its acquisition of Nokia's mobile handset division on Friday. All that and more coming up next.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, April 21st, 2014. This episode is brought to you by RingCentral, a cloud-based phone system we use here at Twit. And it just got better with the launch of Meetings, the full-service video conference feature. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral starts at under $25 a month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. Buy one desk phone, get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it easy and fast to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free two-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Mike Elgin.
And I'm Jason Howell.
Tech News Today explores the big stories of the day with some of the world's best journalists. Our guest co-anchor today is Mitch Wagner, the West Coast Bureau Chief for Light Reading. Welcome, Mitch.
Hi, Mike and Jason. Thanks for having me today.
Very glad to have you. Today is a special day because the Game Boy gaming system turns 25. It was 25 years ago today that it was launched in Japan. Did you ever play Game Boy? That's probably before your time as well as mine, Mitch.
I would say yes, before my time. Thank you for the flattery, but
you're
in fact,
welcome.
I think it was a little after my time. But I've never had the eye-hand coordination for that kind of thing. I'm a total spaz.
Yeah. I mean, it was probably the most consumer-y gaming system there was at the time. Looking at it now, it's pretty bare bones, but it was cool because it had these little cartridges and stuff like that. So I don't know. How about you, Jason? Were you already you were what, a teenager when that came out?
I mean, I played plenty of Game Boy. I never had one of my own, but I was into all the video games and stuff, and had a lot of friends that had the Game Boy, so I could live vicariously through them.
Hard to believe.
You never had a Game Boy of your own? That's so sad.
It's so sad. He was very poor.
I was a sheltered gaming gaming child.
He carved one out of wood.
It was cheaper anyway.
Right.
Well, let's jump right into the news. Apple and Google have gone to extremes to convince game developers to launch exclusively, or at least first, on their respective platforms, according to an exclusive report in the Wall Street Journal. That report was co-authored by Ian Scher, who's a reporter for the Wall Street Journal, and he joins us here today. Welcome, Ian.
Hi.
So now, what are Apple and Google doing to woo game developers?
Well, essentially, what's happened is we've reached the next step in where the app stores are going. What they're trying to do is they're basically saying, look, we need to get the best content on our platforms and we need to be different from everyone else. So what they're doing is that they're saying to these app developers, typically the top tier ones, hey, if you guys will launch on our platform first and have an exclusivity period of, say, 2 or 3 months, then we will give you some extra marketing help. And usually that means that they have a banner at the top of the App Store's homepage, stuff like that. And the kind of agreements have started to show up. We have two examples in the story of Plants vs. Zombies 2, which was a very highly sought-after sequel by Electronic Arts. Those of you who played Plants vs. Zombies, it was very, very popular for a number of years. And then Cut the Rope 2, which was also a pretty popular physics-based puzzle game that also was exclusive in the App Store for Apple for a number of months.
Now, didn't Apple used to have, or at least pride itself, on a policy where the promoted apps would be based on editorial selection only, based on the quality of the app? This would be a change for them, wouldn't it?
So we actually get into that a little bit in the story. It's very interesting. So the question is, yes, how much of their editorial process is being affected by this? It's unclear. We have some kind of insights that there definitely seems to be some pressure than some kind of suggestions that are pushing the app editorial process in a certain direction. And does that mean that it's being severely affected? It's kind of hard to tell, but it's definitely clear that these exclusives are starting to become very important to Apple, and it is becoming a factor, not the factor, but a factor in how the home page is being created. And as we know, these App Store homepages are incredibly important. Finding an app and finding the right app in the App Store is incredibly hard. I know I personally rely upon the top 25 or 50 lists. And if I don't do that, I'm searching for one or I'm using the homepage. I don't find apps any other way. And a lot of consumers are the same way. So having access to this homepage and putting a banner at the very top, hey, this is best game that we've got right now. It's exclusive to Apple. That brings in a lot more people's eyeballs and they tend to click the buy button. And we have one example in the story that it seems that sometimes you can see as much as a tenfold increase in app installs when you're on the homepage at the with one of those banners. So this is not a minor thing to get that. And it's very, very interesting.
I know that a lot of the App Store developers say that the App Store, they're really complaining the App Store is broken, that it's hard to find things, that it's really dominated by free games and clones and cheap knockoffs of other apps. Are you seeing any of that at all? And I'm wondering how this might affect that.
It's really hard. So this is, we're talking about that conversation is toward the, not to offend, but the lower end of the App Store, if you will, right? Where we deal with these clones of games and these copies, and they're not really that great. Part of the point of this process is to go for the high-end people, to really go for these games that are highly sought after, that have their own marketing outside of Apple's App Store, which when you're a company that's marketing in like a bus stop, then you're a whole different type of company than someone who's just copying a bunch of apps. So this is where their focus is. Certainly the copying and all that type of stuff, that's a problem too. And that's certainly something that the companies are either addressing or need to address. But that's separate from what we're trying to focus on in this story, at least.
Now, clearly it's a huge deal for the app developers to get on that homepage and to be promoted like that. But how big of a deal is it for Apple and Google? I mean, if you're going to choose between an iPhone and an Android phone, it seems to me that a month or two or 3 months of exclusivity for a few gaming apps is not going to sway you one way or the other.
Right. So the big thing is, of course, I don't know if you remember, but when Plants vs. Zombies 2 came out, they didn't say how long it was going to be exclusive, and they didn't say when the Android version was coming until it did. So part of this is the kind of, what's a good term for it? It's kind of there's not that much of it. Go get it now, right? And so there's definitely some people who believe, and Apple and Google seem to, and Amazon, by the way, seem to agree with this as well, that having these apps exclusive on your platform does make you more attractive. And if you get enough of them and a plurality of them, then you become the place to go to get the best apps and the most recent ones. So that's part of what they're trying to build here. If you look at the bottom of our story, we quote IDC, Lewis Ward, one of the analysts there. He says it seems to be right now that games are actually a very low figure. It doesn't figure in that much to when I'm buying a smartphone or a tablet. So surveys say, okay, maybe this app exclusivity doesn't matter, but Apple, Google, and Amazon seem to believe that if you can get enough of these exclusives, then you become kind of a high-end retailer. You're the best person to go to for these apps, and maybe that will sway people over to your side.
Now, you said
I know that I was anecdotally I was participating in a discussion of iPad versus Android over the weekend, because that sort of thing never results in flame wars and is always very productive.
Never. And what are you talking about?
A number of people were citing favorite games as a factor in their purchase decision. So it's definitely up there.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, I think that Lewis, when I talked to him, said it was like it doesn't figure in the top five, but it's still there. The question is who you are and what kind of person you are, right? I certainly care a lot more about the games on my smartphone than, say, my mother-in-law. But those things change over time. And, people, if they start believing that, I need to go to Apple because it has the best games all the time and the most recent ones, then that might become a bigger and bigger factor over time. And that's part of what these people are betting on. And you can look at the console industry as kind of an example for this. So Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo all shell out quite a bit of money to try and get exclusive content. And what do you end up with? You've got games like Titanfall that came out in March, which is only on the Xbox and the PCs. You've got games like Halo, where Microsoft ended up buying that game and they own it. And you've got all these different types of examples. Sony, they have on Assassin's Creed, every time you buy Assassin's Creed, there's a sticker on there that says there's an hour more of exclusive content just for PS3 owners. So these things matter to some people. And again, I mean, this is about the next stage in the evolution of the App Store. The first part was getting them up and getting people to come to them. Now you've got, you know, getting the tools and everything ready so that you can make apps easily. Apple was winning for the longest time because it was easier to write for their platform than it was for Google. Now that's not so much the case. Now they're pretty much even. So this is what Apple needs to do to get that much more attention. And of course, Google and Amazon need to respond.
Now, you reported that Apple doesn't offer money for game exclusive. Do we know if Google or Amazon does?
So at the moment, what it looks like is that none of them are offering money, or at least there haven't been any checks handed over. We don't know entirely all the offers that have been made. The problem is that a lot of these conversations are happening in conversation. We say in the story that one of the processes of the App Store these days is that I walk over to Apple or Google or Amazon. I show them my most recent version of the app, or I'm giving them a presentation. And then they say, oh, this is really good. How about an exclusivity deal? And so in those conversations, obviously, a lot of things can be said, and it's unclear who's gotten what offers and whatnot. But from what we can tell, there are no checks that have been signed. Let's put it that way.
I see. Now, would you imagine, or have you seen any indication that these policies of heavily promoting for exclusivity will carry over into the set-top box business? I mean, we know that the Amazon box is going to have games, Google will have games, and probably Apple's box will have games at some point. Is this going to spill over?
Well, it's very clear that they're setting up for this kind of battle, right? I mean, again, if you look to the console industry as an analog here, it's obvious, right? The more and more your competition becomes more even to you, the more you have to pull these different levers, if you will, to really make the difference. And certainly, if we're looking at it, you know, the console industry, they're fighting for exclusives all the time. They're signing checks over in the console industry. So it seems that it's a matter of time before that happens here too. Although it's, of course, completely unclear whether that will be the case. But right now they're using these marketing muscle as the way to do it. Maybe at one point that won't be enough anymore.
Well, Ian, I want to thank you for coming on Tech News today and telling us about your story.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You can find Ian Scher at the Wall Street Journal's website at WSJ.com and on Twitter at Ian Scher. That's Scher with two R's. Well, in a sec, we're going to tell you what's happening in Japan with a really interesting communications technology. But first, I want to tell you about another communications technology called RingCentral, who is one of our sponsors today. When we built the studio here at TWIT, we wanted to do everything in the cloud, and having old school hardware, big iron hardware for the phone system just didn't make any sense at all. So when we decided to do a cloud-based phone system, RingCentral was a no-brainer. We love RingCentral. It gives us so many different features, and it's all very lightweight because, again, everything happens in the cloud. Plus, zero startup costs, no PBX hardware to install or maintain. It's perfect for a nimble organization like TWIT. And now RingCentral, of course, has launched Meetings. So in addition to everything that we love about RingCentral, like receiving voicemails through email, sending and receiving fax messages from smartphones, which is a fantastic feature, the auto receptionist who greets our callers and so on, now we have Meetings. We can host face-to-face meetings in high def, share desktop or documents with anyone, anytime, anywhere, on any device. Meetings makes RingCentral the single best business solution on the market today. And RingCentral offers all-inclusive pricing under $25 a month per user, and you can start right now with a 30-day risk-free trial. And they have a special offer for Tech News Today listeners. When you buy one desk phone, you get a second phone free up to 20 phones. So call this number designated for TWIT listeners, 800-543-9980. That's 800-543-9980. Or you can go to ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. Well, the Japanese enterprise company NTT Communications is rolling out WebRTC for an in-app chat room. WebRTC is a communication standard that supports browser-to-browser applications for voice calling, video chat, and peer-to-peer file sharing. Now, this is a really interesting technology, Mitch, because, again, it's peer-to-peer and does not require plugins. It's a browser-based technology that requires no plugins, so it's very simple to get started with it, and once you're started, there's no central control for it. So it's, you know, it's peer-to-peer in the same way that, you know, torrent files are peer-to-peer. So it's kind of a vaguely subversive thing, especially given that it's all about communications. This is, of course, a Japanese company rolling out a Japanese-centric app. So, of course, it has little cat icons, and it's very cute and sweet and fun. But this is serious technology that probably has a pretty amazing future. What is your view on this?
Yeah, I think it's interesting in a couple of ways. It would appear to have the potential to allow businesses, first of all, to set up more lightweight and simultaneously more rich connection with customers. I mean, we've all had the experience of going onto a website and you see a little bubble pop up that says chat now with a customer service representative, and this way you could do it over IM video or voice chat, which is a little bit more of a rich experience. I also wonder, and I don't know the answer to this question, to what extent this has the potential to be more secure and less subject to being eavesdropped on, which is something that's on all of our minds these days in the post-Snowden era. Right now, it's just this one Japanese company that's doing it. A lot of the other service providers have been tepid on jumping in, but I think if NTT succeeds with it, we can expect to see others jump in.
Yeah, and it's really interesting. This started with Google. They launched this, I believe, in 2011. So this is a pretty new technology, and I just think that there's going to be an explosion in implementations of this. Again, it's open for anyone to use. It's simply a protocol. It is not currently supported by Internet Explorer or Safari. It is supported in Chrome and also Firefox, and I believe also Opera. So this could be a devastating thing for Microsoft's Skype service, which we use here quite a bit, because it essentially is so lightweight and easy to use. Once this goes international, a lot of the international calls that fuels a lot of the Skype business will essentially go away, because this is, you know, super easy to use, free to use, and so on. So this is quite a subversive technology, I think.
Yeah. And you also have an issue here where a lot of companies and people are not just interested in avoiding eavesdropping, but avoiding centralized points of control. You see efforts like MeshNet to establish a decentralized internet, and you see proposals for encrypting basically the entire internet. So this would seem to go along with that, really, really putting the power or back at the edges of the internet and away from the central points of control.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a whole bunch of people in favor of that sort of thing, and a whole bunch of big corporations who are against it, and probably governments as well. I'm sure that the Chinese government is not thrilled with these kinds of developments. Well, Facebook plans to announce a mobile ad network on April 30th, according to a report at Recode. Now, this is we talked a little bit about this and referred to this area of advertising last week, when you talk about how Twitter is embracing a Facebook-like feature where ads can enable mobile app downloads immediately. Now, this is, of course, has not been announced yet. We expect it to be announced later on, but right now there's no name for it. And this will deliver ads directly to third-party mobile apps. This is really an interesting thing. Now, you and I, Mitch, we've had a million conversations offline about Facebook versus Google Plus versus Twitter, and we've had a lot of conversations about social media, and this to me is kind of a version of the Google business for social media. There are no ads on Google Plus, but they harvest they use Google Plus to harvest personal information, which can then be applied when people are still using their same login on other services. So the activity that happens on Google Plus affects the advertising you see theoretically and probably in actuality on YouTube, on Gmail, when you do search, when you do use other Google advertising supported services. And this is essentially the same thing that's happening with Facebook here. What they want to do is harvest all these rich social signals, find out what people want, who their connections are, and so on. And then when they're somewhere else that appears to the user to have nothing to do with Facebook, they'll get contextual advertising based on their activity on Facebook. That's a pretty powerful model, I think.
Yeah. Facebook is a really fascinating company to watch right now. My read of what's going on with Facebook is that the monolithic Facebook app, as we know it today, Facebook.com, is doomed in the long term. It's a fad in the long term. In the next few years, we won't be doing that anymore. On the other hand, Mark Zuckerberg is a very, very smart guy. He's a genius, and I think he's very well aware of that. So what we see is Facebook disaggregating into a number of different services and Facebook buying a number of different companies and basically changing itself into a conglomerate, kind of the internet version of General Electric, where just they own a lot of different companies and a lot of different products. And this definitely plays into that. It's their ad product. So I think Facebook is going to be a really fascinating company to watch in the next 5 years to see if they could do as many other tech companies have had to do and make a transition as their old business model becomes obsolete to transition to something new that builds on the old.
And it feels a lot like Google envy because a lot of the things that they're doing are very Google-like. And it needs to be said that even as they embrace this new model where they have tons of little apps everywhere for all these different features, for the most part, they're also going to obviously continue Facebook.com as a social network. And, of course, Google is the same way. Even as they talk about a social layer for the Internet that's based on Google+, where you can use Google+ in a number of ways, including the Plus page ads that they rolled out recently, where you know you see a display ad, you click on it, it's a Google+ post that is hovering completely disembodied from the Google+ service over the page that you were looking at, and you can add, you know, plus one things and add comments, and then you, when it goes away, it shrinks back into the display ad. That's an example of a social layer for the Internet. But again, Google Plus is not going away as a social network, even as they expand and sprinkle social pixie dust all over the Internet. Same thing with Facebook. They want to be everywhere, but of course, Facebook.com will continue to survive. And of course, there's no question that they would want to follow Google in terms of mobile advertising because Google currently dominates the market for mobile advertising. They're the only company that's really succeeded in a big way. And everybody's gunning for Google now in mobile advertising. So I'm sure that Facebook will make some serious headway with this new initiative.
Yeah, a very wise man, I think his name rhymes with Schmelgen, said recently that all these big web scale companies just want to be each other. And they're all just running around in circles imitating each other while also innovating. So you see Twitter implementing profile pages that look like Facebook profile pages and implementing pop-up notifications that look like Facebook pop-up notifications. And now we see Facebook doing ads that look like Google's, and Google's got a social network that looks like Facebook. So that's what we see in maturing industries.
That's right. And historically, the immature technology industry has not done that. And that's why in the old days, companies would rise and fall. There would be this flavor of the month for a couple, 3 years, and then they would fade away and never be heard from again. The Silicon Valley is littered with the remnants of dead companies that used to be the hot new thing. And none of these social companies want to be that, follow that pattern. You have to reinvent yourself every 3 or 4 years in technology or you're dead. You have to be a new company with a new model. You have to feed on your children, as they say, gruesomely. And you have to compete with yourself, essentially, with new models.
Historically, Microsoft used to be really good at that, arguably the best. They went from a development tools company to an operating system company to a GUI company, and then famously, for those of us who were around, they said the internet is terrible in 1995. They said the internet is terrible, the internet is fad, the internet is stupid. No, the internet is the future. And they took over the internet. Then they lost the ability to do that in 2000. And that's one of the things that makes Facebook so fascinating to watch now, because we're coming up right now on the first time Facebook has had to make that leap.
Yeah.
And a company that does it once can likely do it again a couple of more times.
That's right.
But many companies fail to do it once.
That's right. That's exactly right. So it looks like these companies are learning the lessons of history, and we'll see where that takes them. Well, Square wants to be acquired and fast, according to reports in the Wall Street Journal. The startup has held meeting with several companies, including Google, Apple, and PayPal, which is owned by eBay. Square makes credit card readers that attach to smartphones and tablets, and it also has a payment system to go with it. Square was founded by Twitter co-founder Jack Dorsey. This is a really interesting. Speaking of companies that were the flavor of the month and then have suddenly found themselves declining, Square is burning through its the cash that it raised, the venture capital that it raised, and now it looks like they are aggressively seeking to be acquired by a large company. Mitch, do you think that that this would be a good acquisition for companies like Apple, Google, and so on?
Depends on the price. They've got a good network. They've got good engineering, although that stuff can probably be cloned without too much difficulty. It's a little bit sad. If this is the way it's happening, it's a little bit sad because they really, really tried to be disruptive, and it doesn't look like they quite made it. On the other hand, you see those little Square readers all over the place.
Yeah, you do. It's especially in California coffee shops. I notice them all over the place where they have little pivoting thing. They have an iPad and they spin it around and then you sign with your finger. No way that could be a legal signature. My signature looks like some kind of like, you know, 2-year-old was turned loose on the thing. But they are popping up all over the place. And really in the point of sale cash register industry, they're freaked out about this kind of innovation where you can have low cost cloud based point of sale systems to replace the big, you know, machine heavy, very expensive cash register systems that have been around for a long time. So this is really an interesting development that they are just kind of going nowhere. It also needs to be said that there's this sort of controversy brewing in the stories here, because the Wall Street Journal, which broke the story that they're out there talking to Apple, Google, and some of these other companies, said that they were in acquisition talks with Google. And then TechCrunch, with their own sources, said, no, they weren't acquisition talks. They had a couple of meetings, but they were nowhere near acquisitions talk. The truth is that is kind of a misdirection. All acquisition talks start with a kind of like a preliminary, like, what do you think? Is this even feasible? And if that goes nowhere, then you walk away after an hour. And you can say that there were no acquisition talks. But clearly, they want to be acquired, according to these reports. And Google was approached. There was a meeting. And so so that is something that they would be taking very seriously. Of course, as you said, Google has all the technology they want. They have their own system. And this could be a distraction for that company. So.
Yeah, when you read articles about acquisition talks that are all subject to anonymous sources, you know, anonymous source articles are always suspect. And in this case, it's always a question of whether the whole thing was just a trial balloon, either by Square or by Google or by their allies or by their enemies. So thinking about the possibilities is more complicated than trying to figure out who's doing what to who on Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Exactly. Now, the valuation of the company is only $5.2 billion, but my guess is that there will be an acquisition and it will be for significantly less than $5.2 billion. Well, the wireless carrier market in the U.S. is changing fast, according to a report by Mike Dano in the Fierce Wireless on the Fierce Wireless site. Specifically, small carriers are being gobbled up by the larger ones. And Mike Dano is here with us. He's the executive editor at Fierce Wireless. Welcome, Mike.
Hey, yes. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Glad you're here. Can you give us a sense of what's happening in the wireless carrier industry? Who's buying what?
Yeah, it's certainly an interesting space to track right now. There is a fair amount of consolidation right now going on. It started, you know, probably last year, the year before, and it continues on through today. And we've seen some pretty significant transactions, you know, SoftBank's acquisition of 80% of Sprint, AT&T purchased Cricket provider Leap Wireless, T-Mobile purchased Metro PCS, and so those are some of the bigger acquisitions that have happened recently. But what we're also seeing is a lot of the smaller Tier 2 and Tier 3 wireless carriers that are getting acquired by the larger carriers, and so you can kind of see that market consolidation trickling down into the smaller carriers that used to be sort of insulated from that, and now they're certainly fair game nowadays as the big wireless carriers look to sort of, you know, bolster their networks and increase their spectrum positions.
Now, what happens when a smaller carrier is acquired for the users or customers of that carrier? Do things change for them typically?
Yeah, it kind of depends on how the acquisition is structured. You know, the article that I wrote today is about two different carriers. One is Golden State Cellular in California, and the other one is Mobi PCS in Hawaii. And so, for the Golden State Cellular transaction, Verizon essentially just acquired that carrier. So they got the spectrum, they got the network that they operate, they got the all the subscribers that Golden State Cellular had. And by the way, according to the people I'm speaking with, that was only about 18,000 subscribers that Golden State Cellular has. So in that scenario, it was a kind of a full acquisition of everything that Golden State Cellular operated. But, you know, in the other one that happened today, this is by Verizon. The other one that happened today, Verizon acquired the spectrum of Mobi PCS in Hawaii. And in that transaction, it was just the spectrum that Verizon acquired, and Mobi PCS is leasing back the spectrum from Verizon so that they're able to continue operations until they can figure out what they're going to do. They may become an MVNO of Verizon. They may decide to discontinue operations and sell off their customers. It's unclear at this point. But it's fair to say that these smaller carriers are, you know, they're looking for anything that they can that they can get at this point. Their inability to offer nationwide plans on the same level of a Verizon or an AT&T, really, it just doesn't give them a whole lot of options in the market. And that's why we're seeing all of this consolidation with the smaller wireless carriers.
Now, are you concerned that we're going to end up with like three or four carriers and that's it? I mean, my understanding is that once you get down to three, you're in trouble because then the prices just skyrocket.
Yes, that's a good point. It depends on who you ask. I mean, there's some financial analysts who are saying that that it would be perfectly reasonable for the market to scale down to three major nationwide carriers, and that based on research into other international markets like Austria and the Netherlands that have three nationwide carriers like that, it actually does result in less expensive prices for consumers. So there's that side of the argument. There's plenty of other people, particularly some of the lobbyists in Washington, D.C., who argue that you know, prices will naturally rise as consolidation increases, and you really do need a lot of those smaller tier two and tier three carriers to keep prices low and continue to push competition. So, you know, I'm not making a judgment at this point, but there's certainly both sides. There's plenty on both sides of that argument.
Mike Dano, I want to thank you for coming on Tech News today. We'll be watching this continued consolidation and hope for the best with our fingers crossed. Thanks again for coming on.
Thank you.
All right, you can find Mike Dano at fiercewireless.com and also on Twitter at Mike D. Dano. Well, in a sec, we're going to tell you what's happening with Microsoft and Nokia. But first, I want to tell you about Squarespace. Squarespace is the place to build a website, because when you're done building a website on squarespace.com, your site will be beautiful, highly functional, very high performance, and very, very easy to manage and maintain, evolve, develop, and grow as your business grows. And if you do have a business, if you're building a business and using Squarespace to build your business's website, you can also use Squarespace's amazing logo creator tool. That's right. You can create a logo, even if you're not a designer, especially if you're not a designer, and you can create a logo that makes you look like you're a brilliant designer, because the tools are so easy to use and so well designed for what they do. And once you have, of course, once you have your logo, you can trademark it and use that in the future. If you want to sell something on your website, if you want to do e-commerce, all subscription plan levels now on Squarespace support e-commerce. And that's not just for selling things online. You can use it for cash wedding registries, school fund drives, whatever you do that requires you to raise money or to sell things. It's inexpensive. Squarespace starts at just $8 a month, and that includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. And Squarespace is famously mobile ready. What does that mean? That means a number of things. One of them is that they have a metric app for iPhone and iPad that lets you check site stats and monitor your site. There's a blog app that helps you do text updates, tap and drag images to change layouts, and monitor comments even as you're running around town. Mobile ready also means that your website will look fantastic, not only on a gigantic screen, but also on a tiny screen. If somebody's looking at it with even the smallest smartphone, Squarespace redesigns itself on the fly for the size of the device that the user is using. And you don't have to do anything to make that happen. It just happens. That's how cool Squarespace is as a place to build your website. So start a free 2-week trial, no credit card required, and start building your website. When you decide to sign up with Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code TNT. That'll get you 10% off, and it'll also show your support for Tech News Today, and we appreciate that. And we thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. And remember that a better web awaits, and it starts with your new Squarespace website. Well, Microsoft will finalize its $7.2 billion acquisition of Nokia Devices and Services division on Friday, April 25th. according to a blog post on the Microsoft site. I think also Nokia had a similar post. Microsoft will take over the Nokia.com domain and Nokia social media accounts, at least for the time being. And the company also said that counter to previous statements, they won't be acquiring Nokia's Korean factory. Also, unconfirmed reports over the weekend say the Nokia Devices and Services division will be renamed as the Microsoft Mobile Oi. That's right.
Oi.
The word Oi is Finnish for corporation, and it's also Yiddish for ouch, but I think they're going with the Finnish one because, of course, Nokia is a Finnish company. So that's a nice wrap-up of something we've pretty much known has been was going to happen for sure since the Chinese regulators approved the deal. Well, in other news, starting today, Microsoft's Bing search engine will be used to predict who wins TV talent shows like The Voice, American Idol, and Dancing with the Stars. Simply search Bing for the show of your choice, and Microsoft will display the results of their prediction. And, of course, if it's accurate, it'll completely ruin the show for you. What do you think about this, Mitch? Is this just a rotten thing for Microsoft to do, is spoil these shows for people?
I think when the aliens come to Earth and wish to record the complete decline of human civilization, this will be marked as the moment when it began.
Very well summed up, and I agree with you entirely. And, of course, Google tends to do things like this for more serious things like tracking flu epidemics and stuff like that. Microsoft is going after the less consequential ones. It's probably a good idea, since Google has had some bad results recently with this sort of thing. Well, Mitch, I want to thank you for guest co-anchoring on Tech News Today. Now, I understand that you've got a big conference coming up.
Yeah, it's called the Light Reading Big Telecom Event. It's June 17th through 18th in the beautiful city of Chicago, and it's for leaders of the telecom industry to discuss how to use technology to drive business value. The topics include software-defined networking, virtualization, data center transformation, mobile virtualization, and more. So you can find out more about that at bigtelecomevent.com.
And you are an excellent writer and analyst. Where can people read your stuff?
Well, I'm Mitch Wagner on Twitter, Google+, Tumblr, and Facebook, but I save my best work for latereading.com, where I am West Coast Bureau Chief.
Excellent. Well, it's great to have you on Tech News Today. As always, thanks again for being here.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Well, there are lots of ways to subscribe to Tech News Today. You can subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. You can subscribe on YouTube at youtube.com/Tech News Today. You can also follow Twit's breaking news feed on Twitter. That's Twit News. We want to hear from you, so send us an email at tnt@twit.tv or leave us a voicemail by calling 260-TNT-SHOW. Also, don't miss our evening newscast, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. Pacific tonight and every weeknight. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.